Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia? Solartopia, Solartopia.
Still no one there, Harvey.
And the garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
too many things we found. I am glad to be back with you. Thank you to the crew in New York for getting this done. I know there's been a big ordeal with the phone system. And we are glad to be back on the air. We got a ton to talk about, but the first thing and the most important thing I need to announce is that my daughter Rachel just had our 12th grandchild, my fifth girl, seven boys. Congratulations, Mazel Tov all around. It's a beautiful child. Hasn't been named yet, but, you know, we got to get our priorities straight. It's a great thing to be able to announce with the resumption of our show, the Solartopia show. We are going to focus today on election theft. I have four great guests lined up, we will see who calls in. We're going to start with Chris Souther, who's a tremendous lawyer, never done the show before, who spent a lot of really important time down in Alabama dealing with the nightmare of this election with Roy Moore. And as we are speaking, Roy Moore, the lunatic, right wing, I don't know how you describe this guy, who was the nominee for Senate in Alabama, has not conceded, still hasn't conceded. And I wish to God that Hillary Clinton had taken a page out of his book. She should never have conceded, neither should Al Gore or John Kerry. And we'll talk about that. But the bottom line here is that the state of Alabama has apparently shut him down and is not going to grant him a recount. Roy Moore has gone to court and is still pursuing this in court, trying to get the election overturned to put the first Democrat from Alabama into the Senate, I think, in 25 years. But according to New York Times, Roy Moore sued and the state of Alabama just ignored him. And just flat-out certified Doug Jones to be the new U.S. Senator from Alabama. I wish they'd done it before the insane, well, it wouldn't have mattered, I guess, but the insane vote on Trump's horrifying tax package. But it is a step forward to a certain extent. And we're going to have great detail with our four fabulous experts on what really happened in Alabama and what we need to do to go forward with safe elections, because we sure don't have an electoral system now that makes any sense. I actually was kind of looking forward to the challenge in Alabama because, Moore is arguing that the state let all these black people vote, and who, why in God's name, is the United States of America in 2016, according to Roy Moore, letting black people vote. That was his kind of contention, basically. But we also had some really important stuff happen with electronic ballot images and much other stuff. So who do we have with us? Chris Souther, are you with us? Chris, not there yet.
Mimi's who there.
Any of our guests, Susie?
Shannon, I'm here.
Mimi? What's that?
I'm here, but boy, I can barely hear Harvey.
Well, I think there are probably some bugs to work out in the new system. Can you hear me now?
You're very faint, like just extremely faint. But
okay. Well,
you don't go in and out. You're just really faint.
And Susie Shannon, you with us?
But your engineer was very clear.
Oh, well, maybe we should let him run the show. I don't know. John Simon, you with us? Not there yet. And Chris
Jonathan's on.
What's that?
Jonathan's on.
Oh, good. Okay.
Is that you, John? It's Mimi. I can hear you very well.
Hey, Mimi.
Yeah. Oh, hi, John. Hi. Oh, okay. Sort of well. Okay.
What stage are we at here? I mean, I it's about 5 minutes in, I guess.
Yes.
And, yeah.
Susie Shannon, have you joined us?
I can't hear Harvey, though. I can't,
no, me neither.
A little background.
Ah, okay. So we've got a technical problem. Let me switch headphones here. Maybe that's the problem. Maybe
Chris is on as well.
What's that?
Chris is on as well. I'm trying to work out the technical problems.
Okay, great. No, that's the problem. And, folks, this is, as you know, PRN had a major problem with its phone.
We cannot system. Hear you, Harvey.
Okay. Let me hang up. I'm going to call right back.
No, it's nothing you're doing with your voice. Just so you know, we can't hear what you're saying. I can't anyway.
Yeah, it's coming
it's
across
insect.
The room.
There, it's not it's you not talking louder. It's something's wrong.
He's there somewhere. We can tell.
Right, right, Jonathan. So good to hear your voice.
You too. Hey.
Yeah. But, Chris, you're there too, right?
I'm here.
Good
Hi,
work
Chris.
In Alabama.
Yeah.
Hopeful.
But it never ends.
It never ends. But it is coming to the end of the beginning.
Well, it's the end of something and the beginning of something else, yes.
It's the end of the beginning because somebody finally got scared.
Yeah.
I don't know what that will cause them to do, but for now, there's an awareness instead of complete impunity.
Okay, here we are.
Well,
can you guys hear
so.
Me now?
We'll see.
It's Harvey.
Talk, Harvey.
Yes.
Very faint, very faint.
Yeah, I hear you well. I don't hear Harvey at all.
All right, well,
yes,
we'll
I hear the
you.
Guests. I don't hear Harvey.
Chris Souter, are you on the phone? Hello?
Yeah, Harvey, people cannot hear you. You're very faint to me, and I think Chris and I were just talking. I can hear him.
Can you hear me now? Can you hear me better?
Harvey,
yeah,
is that
that's
you?
Better.
Yeah. Can you hear me better?
I can hear you better. Can anybody else hear you?
Yep.
Well, I can
Jonathan
hear him,
can
but
hear
it's
you.
Not... at the same level as you.
But you just disappeared again.
Okay,
yep.
So we're looking at the bugs. I just tried two different sets of headphones, and Jesse seemed to be able to hear me fine in the studio. So there seems to be that technical problem. Chris Souter, are you with us?
I'm here.
Okay, Chris, you're a little faint, but we'll work through this. Chris, you spent the most time of any of us in Alabama. And as we're speaking, within the last hour or two, the state of Alabama has certified Doug Jones as the winner of the Senate election. Now, Roy Moore has not conceded. The New York Times says there are two other races that he lost that he hasn't conceded. I wish the Democrats had the same kind of stick-to-itiveness that Roy Moore seems to have. But Roy Moore made some assertions about the Alabama election, where he said basically that all those black people voted and they shouldn't have. Do you want to speak to that a bit?
Well, I think that Moore's lawsuit really had more to do with the next election and the politics in Alabama than it had to do with the special election on December 12th. He's already running for governor against incumbent Kay Ivey, and he's trying to define her and the Secretary of State, John Merrill, as complicit in Jones's victory. I took a quick look at his complaint, and it has a lot of the usual kind of Republican drivel about voter fraud. He does cite some people to support his allegations, but it's a pretty confusing and weak complaint. But in any event, the court dismissed it because under Alabama law, Alabama courts cannot hear election contests for federal candidates. Those under Alabama law go straight to either the Senate or if it's in a congressional race to the U.S. House of Representatives. So Moore's only recourse at this point legally is to go to the United States Senate, and I don't think they really have any appetite right now for anything related to Roy Moore. But the complaint is the usual kind of stuff about, quote, voter fraud, which has become a part of the Republican playbook.
Well, this voter fraud, what can you tell us exactly what they mean by voter fraud?
Well, it is a little hard to tell because it's kind of ambiguous in the complaint, but they're claiming that in areas where Jones did well, particularly in Jefferson County, which is Birmingham, that the turnout was considerably higher than it was in the runoff. And therefore, they're arguing that it's a statistical anomaly unlikely to occur. And therefore, there must have been people voting twice or people who weren't qualified to vote voting. They reference there was something in the media, an interview done on election night, which they reference with one of the workers who was from out of state, and he made some kind of remark about how Jones has a lot of out-of-staters to thank. And they have taken that to mean the out-of-staters voted. I saw the interview. I think what he meant was there were a lot of people who came in to canvass for Jones, but you really need a lot more than what he has alleged, even if the court had jurisdiction, in order to prove a case. And, you know, one of the things you have to demonstrate in an election contest complaint is that were it not for the fraud or the mistakes, that the outcome would be different. And he really hasn't even alleged that. So, as I say, I think it really has to do more with the politics of the Republican Party in Alabama than it does with the December 12 special election for U.S. Senate.
Yeah, and also the emotional makeup of Roy Moore. Mimi Kennedy, you were about to say a few things.
I was just congratulating Chris on the work that he did in Alabama about making sure that ballot images were established as public record rather than the county officials setting their machines to save only the ballot images of the writing candidates. That's not the default, as John Brakey discovered. So you have to work to set it off the default and into destroy all the ballot images, but just keep the write-in ballots. And I was very glad and proud that John and Chris went into Alabama on the morning of the election and got the judge to say that all ballot images must be saved. And, of course, that put the Republican Secretary of State, I'm surprised Roy Moore would deride him because Merrill was fast with the AG, Attorney General, to court to say, you can't make us tell our county officials to do this. We have no jurisdiction over how county officials run their elections. We, at the Secretary of State, it was a ridiculous argument, in my view, but it prevailed, and I guess they did destroy ballot images. They were certainly given permission to. There was a stay on the order to preserve them, and I believe that there was another court date, wasn't there, Chris, December 21st, to go in and make the argument to lift the stay and establish that command to preserve ballot images. That's what I wanted to say, and I end with a question.
Well, the current status of the case is that it is still in the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court did order a stay on the eve of the election, a stay of the trial court's order that that the Secretary of State instruct county election officials to preserve the ballots. And now really the question is what will happen in the future, and we're briefing that issue right now. We have to submit a brief on January 2nd, okay. And then Secretary of State has another shot at it, and then the court will decide. It was pretty satisfying to go into the heart of Dixie and win, even if it was short-lived, win an order to preserve all ballot images. I would have put our chances at about 1 in 10 when we arrived. But what we discovered was that if you talk common sense with a little bit of the law, the federal law requires that all election materials be preserved for 22 months. And that law has actually been incorporated in the Secretary of State's own election handbook.
Uh-huh.
And to some extent, he didn't, the Secretary of State's lawyer, made a very weak attempt to rebut that part of it. His argument was really procedural, that mainly that he didn't have the ability to enforce such an order, which is a little weak as well. But we have to remember we're going before a Supreme Court now that is composed of entirely conservative Republicans who maybe on this issue might not follow partisan lines. I suspect part of Merrill's motivation before the election was basically to protect in some way more should there be a recount or a contest. Everybody assuming that Moore was going to come out on top, and now the tables have kind of turned.
Right.
I noticed that in the complaint, and also in the words of Moore's spokesperson on CNN today, that they're kind of trying to bootstrap the ballot image case into theirs.
Uh huh.
But it's not really what they're – it doesn't seem to be what they're really trying to say. I think what they're primarily trying to say is that that this increase in turnout is the result of people voting who weren't qualified to vote. And
in other words, voting while black.
Although they sort of imply that maybe the results might have been fixed, but – they really provide zero facts in support of that.
Well,
so,
I think they're just finding them out. They're hoisting
John
their own card.
There has been some debate.
That's a good way to put
among
it.
In the election integrity community about what really happened in Alabama. John Simon, do you want to fill us in on that?
Yeah, well, the ironies are piled as thick as Alabama mud and, you know, in the wet season. You know, for election integrity advocates to go to bat for a Roy Moore is, you know, ironic enough. But I think, you know, part of this is looking at this in or out of context. If you look at it just narrowly, you know, in just as one race, you see it one way. And if you look at it in the context of the last 15 years, you know, going all the way back to 2002 and then Ohio in 2004, all the way up through, you know, John Ossoff and Georgia 6th, you see it somewhat differently. And what you see here, those of us who are, looking at it and I admit speculatively, but, you know, trying to sort of figure out, well, who might have the motivation and how might they go about, realizing that motivation to affect an election like this. This has some fairly traditional fingerprints on it. There's some evidence that is now being looked at on a precinct drill down basis. And again, all of this evidence is indirect. We're not looking at the actual ballots. We don't have the ballot images, et cetera, et cetera. But we're looking at the numbers, and there's problems there. And there were problems on election night in the rolling vote total. And as far as I know, unresolved. I mean, there was a period in which the vote totals increased by, I believe it was 16,916 votes, two-thirds of which were for Doug Jones, without any increase in the number of precincts reporting. Now, benign explanation for that could be a stack of absentee ballots someplace, not associated with a precinct, that got uploaded into the central tabulators. But then that raises its own question, which is chain of custody of that pile of ballots. I mean, you can take a pile of ballots and upload it. You can, you know, if you can't trace it to a precinct, you can pretty much upload any numbers you want. So there are things like that, loose ends, threads hanging out of this election, as there were out of the Georgia 6th election, as there were out of the 2016 presidential election, as there were out of the 2016 primaries, that are very, very hard to follow back to the source because of this is basically a system designed for concealment. And, Chris was right. You go in there with maybe a 1 in 10 chance of getting a positive ruling out of a court. And I like to
John
think of that
Simon, Darren, let me jump in.
You actually
are you implying
pass,
that somebody might have stolen
the
election for Doug Jones?
I'm sorry?
Are you implying that somebody might have stolen this election for Doug Jones?
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly something to be considered. There were some very strong motivations to not let Moore, anywhere near the Senate.
But do you have any evidence
primarily
that
among Democrats?
That,
they were among
I mean, you've mentioned
like
some
Carl
things,
and
I want to pass
additional Republicans
in a second.
Mitch McConnell.
But are you
so
saying
if I were looking
that,
for a
perp, based on your years
first,
in the election,
I don't think he can hear you.
That
dots is
you
not,
think there's a credible case that might
point,
be made
really possible
that the election was stolen from Roy Moore?
I'm sorry.
Are you saying there's a credible case that might be made? The election was stolen from Roy Moore?
It was probably too strong, but I mean, I think there are things that would have been worthwhile to look at. And I don't think the process, as it's currently set up for any elections in this country, allow us to look at those things. That's what I'm saying. I'm saying that there are things that sort of go bump in the night. They could go bump this way. They could go bump that way. As we know, over the last 15 years, they've pretty much all gone bump in one direction. So when you see a Democrat have a surprise victory or a progressive have a surprise victory, it's very much out of the pattern. And the first thought, and of course there were, online there were accusations that Democrats stole it for Jones, and I think that's ridiculous. I mean, they don't have the wherewithal. They just don't seem to know how to do it. But there are those who seem to have the wherewithal and have given us pretty good evidence that in the past they've been in there doing something with vote totals, and whether that was in Ohio in 2004 or in Georgia in 2017, there's some fingerprints around. The problem is we can't make a credible case because the data, the evidence is not available. It's not accessible.
All right. Well, that's fairly standard.
In looking at this election, we can celebrate that Doug Jones
won. Especially in Alabama, since the
looking ahead to 2018,
made sure that the ballot images were not kept. Susie Shannon, are you on with us?
I'm on.
So what do you think about all this? Susie Shannon's a member of the Democratic National Committee. And we'll go round robin here. John, we'll come back to you after Susie and Chris and Mimi get another shot. Susie, what, as a member of the Democratic National Committee, how does this Alabama election look to you?
So, first of all, I think the notion that we could have stolen an election in a state where the Secretary of State is a Republican and they're certainly resoundingly Republican throughout the state would be very hard to prove. And there was a 20,000 vote lead on behalf of Jones. So I don't think we should be necessarily putting that out there, even as a question at this point. I'm also going to say, Moore's claims of voter fraud were based in just racist language. Some of those claims included 3 van loads of Mexicans from Mexico coming over to vote. It included 5 bus loads of black voters from Mississippi was one of the claims. And so you can see that this was clearly rooted in racism, clearly rooted in fear of immigrants, coming to take over a Republican state. And I think, really sort of an omen for what we're going to see in other states moving into 2018, in terms of this, fear of the other coming in, to take over, traditionally like white Republican voter states. I think that it's very clear where Moore was going with these complaints. And I think, again, we're going to have to look to other states in the future because I think a lot of this, it's going to be a hysteria that's whipped up within some of these red states to try to make sure that these sort of Republican white voters, are coming out in droves to ensure this doesn't happen again.
It is quite amazing. The idea that's been floated is that the Republicans deliberately sank Roy Moore's campaign. The vote count to make sure that he didn't get in. You are saying, as a member of the Democratic National Committee, that the Democrats don't have the wherewithal to steal an election, especially in Alabama. And of course, the Alabama Secretary of State scuttled John Brakey and Chris Souter's fantastic work on electronic ballot images. Chris Souter, you spent the most time of anybody in Alabama. Is there any possible credibility to the idea that Karl Rove and the Republican establishment deliberately sabotaged Roy Moore's campaign?
Oh, you're asking me. Well, I have to be honest. I haven't really studied that angle. Certainly the politics, the Republican politics in Alabama, would argue that there's a lot of incentive, that there would have been a lot of incentive in terms of the establishment to get rid of Roy Moore because, as I mentioned earlier, now what this is about is the Republican primary for governor, Roy Moore versus Kay Ivey. And So you could argue that they might want to get rid of, might want to stop Roy Moore from going into the Senate, but you could also argue that they would rather him be in the Senate so that they could get him out of the state and they don't have to worry about him. So I could see an argument both ways. I agree that the Democratic Party would have absolutely no
ability to fix this election. And I honestly have been focused on trying to win the right to preserve the ballots. And that's really been my focus. And so I'm kind of more of an observer on the other.
All right, well, let's start another round on that. Are you saying basically you were in Alabama, you did not see like caravans of Mexicans coming up and black people coming over from Mississippi? Yeah, that was not observed by you. And then why you're
well,
in Alabama. Tell us, and we'll go with this, and then
polls,
Amy and John and Susie. Where do we stand now nationwide, and what impact has Alabama had on the campaign to preserve electronic ballot images in elections going forward?
Well, I think as a result of the Secretary, ironically, as a result of the Secretary's of State's opposition to the trial court's order, the issue has been elevated. And what was really kind of a quiet victory with just a few media outlets covering it has now been, you know, elevated many times. And, you know, I think we'll be win or lose in the Alabama Supreme Court. I think we'll be able to point to the trial court's order as kind of a model going forward. Because the Alabama Supreme Court will not decide on the issue of whether or not to preserve ballot images. They will decide on the issue of whether or not the Secretary of State has the authority to enforce the order that was given.
Well, what do you think? What do you think? Where does this come down now in Alabama for the next election?
Harvey, I'd like to speak to some of this when
all right, Mimi,
when I
go ahead, please. Mimi Kennedy.
Okay. I was in Alabama in May giving a speech to JFK Women's Democratic Club in Madison County, which is near Huntsville, which is near Birmingham. Huntsville has the highest number of PhDs per capita in the world because NASA was there, Werner von Braun and John Kennedy were there. It's a big history of smart people, if not Democrats, in the area, and it's very integrated. I spoke to 250 people, a lot of women and a lot of African-Americans and some Latinos, and it was amazing. You could feel that Alabama has been organizing for quite some time. Bernie and Hillary both had their adherents and gave a big shot in the arm to Democratic organizing. So I think that we have to acknowledge that there's a huge wave of Democratic anger and identity that happened, and I think that benefited Doug Jones. I also think I can hear Brad Friedman in my brain going, this sorrow is that we don't know. Why are we guessing? Was it Democrats? Was it Republicans? Who could have thrown this? Who had the way? We know the thing they would have used would be something like fraction magic, a fractional program. Even the cybersecurity guys said that on Capitol Hill last May. The payload you deliver if you're going to steal an election based on pre-polling and guess a percentage that passes the smell test, you're going to fraction the vote somehow. And it is possible somebody tried to do that and that the outpouring for Doug Jones simply overwhelmed it. And it is possible that the Republicans didn't want to risk their necks for the likes of Roy Moore because they had a scenario either way by which they would try to save their butts. Either way, there'd be unpleasantness with Trump or Mitch McConnell, but they either way, they could do it and they weren't going to risk criminal cybercrime. There are all those arguments to be made, but the sorrow is that we have the ability to have transparent elections and go, hey, what really happened? But we're not using that. And that was the brilliance of going for these ballot images that at the moment cannot be manipulated. I don't know what will happen in 4 years. Maybe they'll find a way to pixelate false ballots. I have no idea. It's an arms race. But right now, I think this demand for the ballot images to be preserved as public record scared the pants off of would-be fraudsters and their money people, who Greg Palast could give us some good guesses at. But the truth is, we're guessing. And that's the sorrow. But I have seen on the ground in Alabama an enormous wave of women, of people of color, and of smart people going, God damn, we're not going to let Alabama keep going this way. I am sure that there was a right-wing website, by the way. I'm sure Chris knows about this. Someone alerted me, Mimi, your face is on a right-wing website. Susie, it was you. And indeed it was, because the right-wing conspiracy theorists and right-wing angry people have realized what fraction magic is. And so good, so be it. There it is. Let's stop letting people use it in the dark and everybody look at the vote count. Meanwhile, we and many people have worked against these voter ID laws and what they did in Alabama, closing the DMV offices. And there is Selma. Chris and John went there for great inspiration when they were there. There are a lot of people taking up that history and making sure they and their friends and everyone they know is getting to the polls. So I think Doug Jones is, my speculation would be Doug Jones was a landslide denied, but I don't think speculation is useful. It only points up the bitterness of the fact that we haven't really known what's been going on since the Help America Vote Act increased electronic voting and electronic tabulating to the degree that it did.
Well, it appears now, given the chronological history, that most or all of the electronic voting machines that were foisted on the country after 2002 when it passed, and of course the primary mover of that, Bob Ney, went to prison, those machines are now being replaced.
But the tabulators are still there, Harvey.
Correct me if I'm wrong, John Simon, it's your turn to talk. The big challenge will be to see if we can't get this new generation of electronic voting machines to give ballot images, and we can't get the courts and the secretaries of state to actually make sure that those ballot images are preserved. Is that correct?
I think that's correct. I think that's the challenge, and we should be out there really in every state possible trying to make that happen, either by persuasion with the secretary of state or with legislators to legislate the preservation of ballot images, or, if necessary, through litigation. But I think we ought to really be engaged now in a full court press, because by 2018, more than 60% of the country will be on these new machines, and by 2020, over 80% of the country is likely to be. And so we now have, as Harvey points out, a new generation of voting equipment that has the potential, at least, to provide some protection against fraud. So,
well, Susie Shannon,
we're at a good time.
At the helm,
you kind of
stood
me, Harvey. I never really got a chance to speak.
Is there any consciousness at the DNC of this critical transition to a new generation of voting machines? And is anybody inclined to do anything about it?
So this is what I think is important about this particular case. First of all, I agree that it's elevated this particular issue regarding the ballot images to national status, and people are now tracking on it, which I think is really important. The second thing that I think is really important is that it is setting a precedent. I mean, we're hoping that it will set a positive precedent. This is the type of case where, you know, if a high court would hear it, that you can imagine going all the way to the Supreme Court, because I have a feeling we're just going to be, you know, set in motion for a number of appeals. But I think what's important about this precedent is that this particular case was really led by election protection activists. It wasn't led by the party, and the party traditionally has not led, right? So in the 1940s, At the Democratic National Convention, a group of delegates had to march in order to have desegregation of the military in the platform. In the civil rights movement, the Democratic Party didn't lead. The women's movement, the Democratic Party didn't lead. These are all activists moving on the outside, setting the example. And then when the party came along, it was like, you know, the juggernaut, but it really sort of mainstreamed the idea. So, and I think I said this on a previous show that I was on, that you were hosting, which is that we can't look to the Democratic Party to lead. We have to push the party to join these sort of movements that are in the margins and to mainstream them. But the notion that the Democratic Party has ever led in any of these movements, I mean, I don't know. I've never really seen that historically, and I think it's still the case now. And so what's really important is that activists are really, you know, setting the example for what the party should be doing. And it will come along. It's going to come along eventually because, you know, we can't allow election materials to be destroyed. But I think we also have to stop looking for something that's not there in the party and use the party to mainstream this notion and setting this precedent now in Alabama, you know, regardless of how the court decides, you know, regardless of how the judge decides, I think is really important because sometimes you just have to take the bull by the horns, right, and make something happen in order for people to see what the possibilities are.
Okay, so we've gone around now on these machines. Susie, you're telling us basically that we can't count on the Democratic Party. We can, I think, you know, Mimi works with the other groups, the alternative, you know. What's your group, Mimi?
Progressive Democrats of America.
Javi, I want
to stop you for a minute. When you say machine,
so we know we have a two-pronged.
You can't hear me.
You got to get these voting machines. I want, of course, hand-counted paper ballots, but it appears that people are advocating or saying that electronic voting machines with ballot images may be a safe way to go. So,
no, Javi, no. We need paper ballots.
What Roy Moore is arguing. Is, among other things, and where he's coherent. I mean, to read stuff from him is like reading Trump's tweets. He's arguing that a lot of people who shouldn't have allowed to vote voted. Now we know that they've been stripping. The Republicans have been stripping the voter rolls, and that they did it in 2000 in Florida, and 2004 in Ohio, and certainly in 2016 with cross-check all over the country. In Alabama, what did you see relative to stripping voter rolls and disenfranchising people, and we'll go through the list again. Was that a significant situation in Alabama?
Well, I heard, this is anecdotally, that that there were quite a few voters who showed up at the polls only to learn that they had been purged, that they were no longer on the rolls. And that's a growing problem everywhere. I saw that in 2016 as well. You know, Alabama has the strictest, or one of the strictest, voter ID laws in the country. So it's almost absurd on its face that people who weren't eligible to vote somehow managed to vote. But I do think that the opposite of that is true, which is that there were people who were likely eligible to vote who weren't able to vote. And as I say, that is a problem in many, many states across the country.
And basically, it's race-based. And I suppose we should use Roy Moore's contentions kind of as the template for what we can expect around the rest of the country. Because he's basically arguing that citizens of color probably shouldn't be allowed to vote. Am I off on that?
I think that's...
Well,
more or less correct. Yeah.
All right, Mimi Kennedy, you want to jump in on that?
You need to,
yeah, Harvey, if I may, it's interesting, is it not, that Roy Moore, in all his contention of voter fraud, is not looking into whether his Republican voters were thrown off the voter rolls. That's a sure sign of the fact that the Republicans throw Democrats and people of color off the voter rolls. And again, these are digitized. So without paper records or transparency to the public, it's up to each individual to check his or her online registration. And, you know, people don't have wireless. People don't have computers. Poor people are not as likely to be able to check their registration every day before they go to vote. So naturally, Roy Moore can complain all he wants. But until I see Republican go into, whoa, all our people were thrown off the voter rolls, they couldn't vote. Well, we're not hearing that. So we know that this is we well know that this is a paper tiger, that this is nothing. But the fact that they don't even try to pass the smell test with their arguments is a big deal. However, I'm sure there were people that could not vote because they were purged from the voter rolls. I'm sure it's been done digitally. I'm sure Alabama participates. And yet a Democrat won this time in Alabama. And the media cavils that it's because there's a big Democratic wave, and that always makes me nervous. There was a big combination of anger, organizing, and scaring the bejesus out of would-be fraudsters, that, and Roy Moore being a very insane guy. You know, Joseph Kony tried to establish the Ten Commandments as the law of Uganda, and he did it by murdering, stealing children from their families, having them murder their families. This does not morality make, and I tried to make that point in Alabama over and over. But Roy Moore is nuts. But the Christian fundamentalists think he's a man of God in their magical thinking. He was defeated anyway.
John Simon?
Yeah, I mean, the context here, I think, is, you know, it's pretty obvious that this country has gone down the road to what amounts to all-out political war. And mm-hmm. election integrity advocates were some of the first people to see that coming, you know, 15 years ago, when we saw what was going on. And all was fair in love and war. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, strip and flip, as you've said, you know, you whittle the voting population down. You handle the rest electronically. You have the corporate, the companies, the outfits, the Dominions, ES&S, Command Central, in the old days, Diebold, Premier, you know, not for nothing, have complete control over the vote counting process. The cynicism of recognizing that if you attacked this particular system, which is so, it's so well hidden, it's not out there in the streets. It happens once or twice a year on election day, and it's inside some computers and inside some network someplace. And because this is the beacon of democracy, it couldn't possibly be in any way fraudulent. And to recognize that that was the prevailing psychology in this country, and therefore this system was colossally vulnerable and could be used as the weapon to win what has now become an all-out political war. So you have a country that is governed by a small and shrinking minority. And really, the only way you can pull that off in modern times is by military control or by subverting election systems and basically thwarting the public sovereignty, thwarting the will of the people. That's what we've got going on, and there's every prospect that it will not get better. It will get worse. And every time a Democrat wins an election, there's this, and it was, of course, the case with Obama, there's this great sigh of relief, and it's safe to go back in the water, and everything's okay because a Democrat won. In this case, the point I've been trying to make is, yes, a Democrat won, but he might very well have won courtesy of Karl Rove, whose mortal enemy is Steve Bannon, who was the prime supporter of Roy Moore. And there was every reason for Mitch McConnell and Karl Rove not to want this guy anywhere near the Senate, profound political reasons. So the fact that a Democrat won gives no comfort. The fact that in Virginia, the exit, you know, off-year election, Democrats won, those were not important elections. The big pot is on the table in 2018, 2020. It has now become polarized to the point where there really is no compromise. There is no reconciliation. It's just who wins and who loses. And this system has been vulnerable. It's been so vulnerable. We've collected, as you very well know, reams and reams and books of evidence that they're anomaly after anomaly, all going in the same direction. My case that I'm making is that this election, even though it looked like it went in the opposite direction, was probably going in the same direction. It was probably fulfilling the will of the corporate Republicans who have had the inside pipeline to these corporations and these machines from the get-go, from the time
okay.
of Lava. And, this is what we're looking at. And so it is an emergency. Ballot images will help. Having audit protocols that are workable and have some teeth to them will help. But it is way later in the game than, most people outside of our choir will recognize.
That's great, John. It's a very, very important stuff. Susie Shannon. So we talked now as John and Mimi and Chris have talked about the machines, and then we on this round we're talking about the strip part, the getting people who have the right to vote to protecting it. Now you've told us basically as a member of the Democratic National Committee, you don't see the Democratic Party. Of course, it's a problem. Jumping in on this, how about is the DNC, is the Democratic Party going to work to guarantee people the right to vote? As clearly there was a lot of disenfranchisement in Alabama, as Mimi said, we may have been looking actually at a Doug Jones landslide. Had everybody been allowed to vote who had the right to vote, what is the DNC going to do about the stripping part of taking people off the voter rolls?
Okay, so first of all, I do want to respond to, I think, what John Simon said, and I wholeheartedly disagree. I think that there's no upside to the Republicans losing a seat in Congress. You can see how close a lot of these votes have come, trying to repeal Obamacare, even with the tax package that just passed. I think there's no upside for Republicans ever losing a seat in Congress. This is a win for Democrats. And creating somewhat of a momentum between Virginia and then Alabama, as we can see from like increase donations coming in and people at least thinking that there might be hope, at least some kind of light at the end of the tunnel.
Did the DNC do anything significant to get people to the polls in Alabama?
I'm sorry, do what?
Did the Democratic National Committee do anything significant to get people to the polls in Alabama?
Well, I think it was a combination of the Alabama State Democratic Party, from various organizations who are on the ground. We know, that margin of victory was largely Black women voters, and that requires a lot of coordination between organizations, the state party, the DNC, and the DCCC. So no one organization is ever going to claim, victory for carrying someone over that threshold. So if all of those various organizations and party, the state party, the national party, DCCC are not working together, then it's just not going to happen. I mean, particularly in a red state. So I don't think, you claim victory for the DNC on its own any more than for the state party or the various organizations who are helping to get voters out. So I think it's a coalition movement, and no one, necessarily claims victory on their own. It's a victory for the Democrats because a Democrat was elected to Congress. So that's one. Two, I think the Democratic Party is going to jump in. I don't think they're going to lead the movement, as they don't lead movements historically. And the Republican Party doesn't lead movements either, which is why the Tea Party was able to, have this sort of insurgent movement within the party, within their own party. So I think a lot of these movements come from outside organizations and groups of people who really care, and they move from the margins to the mainstream because the party does get involved. As you know, I would have preferred the DNC you know, to basically go in and have their lawyers go into court and to lead this movement. But it's just, you know, that just didn't happen. And so it really required...
It didn't happen in Alabama. Where is it happening? What is the role now of the Democratic Party in taking back the Congress and the Senate? I mean, do they have any direction, any commitment? What is happening with the Democratic Party in terms of these elections?
I think in terms of the voter purging, this was a huge part of the Unity Commission report that just came out about a week ago. Their final report was released. And the purging of the voter rolls and tackling that particular issue, because it just keeps happening again and again and again, is really at the forefront. And I think in Obama's administration, because he controlled the Justice Department, which we don't have now that there's a Republican president, there was a sense that, you know, the Justice Department was on the ground and they were going to intervene, and we no longer have that. So the party needs to step up and needs to really push back against the voter caging, against cross-match, the purging of these roles. This is a little different than Alabama, because what they were basically saying is that people, you know, black and brown people from outside were coming in to skew the vote, right? So that it's not, even though we know that there were voter purges in Alabama and they were of Democrats and people of color, you know, the case in Alabama is going to be different in a lot of other states. So the Democratic Party, I mean, look.
Oh, my God, we're out of time. We'll have to do this. We'll have to continue this next week. Thank you very much, everybody.
Thanks, Harvey.
Hopefully we'll have our technical difficulties
all right,
solved. Thank you, too, in New York. We'll turn to this next week, okay? This is too important to let go. John Simon, Mimi Kennedy, Chris Stouter, and Susie Shannon. We'll talk again next week. Thank you so much.
Well, we bit that apple and the garden was lost, and so we had to work